Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump's ballroom dream continues becoming a reality. It turns out it'll take over much more of the original building than first thought. Here's ABC's Lana Moise.
The Washington Post reports more than just the East Wing facade is being replaced to make way for President Trump's $250 million ballroom. The Post, citing a White House official, now says the entirety of the East Wing is being rebuilt. ABC News has not independently verified that report. Some critics slamming the project for lack of transparency. The president previously pledged construction would not impact the existing structure.
This is day 22 of the government shutdown. President Trump says he will not talk with Democrats until the government's reopened. Members of Congress still getting paid. Almost all other federal workers are not. The Louvre is reopened for the first time since Sunday's brazen jewelry heist. Two buses crashing in Uganda overnight, killing at least 63 people. This is ABC News.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Coleman Domingo has become one of the most respected and in-demand actors in Hollywood. Variety is reporting that the Oscar-nominated actor will join the cast of Wicked for Good. That's the sequel to the 2025 smash hit starring Cynthia Erivo and Ariana Grande. Domingo will provide the voice for the Cowardly Lion. Coleman was nominated for an Academy Award in the Best Actor category for his role in Sing Sing, a film about how prisoners in a high-security facility learn the art of acting. His other credits include Lincoln, The Color Purple, and he will appear in the upcoming big-budget films The Running Man and in the film Michael about Michael Jackson, where he will play Jackson's father, Joe Jackson. Wicked for Good comes out November 21st of 2026. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Bucks basketball is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks begin their 58th season tonight in Milwaukee when they host the Wizards. Their new center, Miles Turner, says they've had a new level of energy preparing for tonight's game.
This past week of practice has been very intentional. I mean, I think it's been really good. Guys are talking up, making noise, just talking back and forth and whatnot. And I think that's how it's supposed to be, especially throughout the year. You know what I'm saying? We're intense in practice. When that makes the games that much easier.
NFL, the Packers at practice for Sunday night in Pittsburgh. Matt LaFleur downplaying the matchup against the Steelers quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
I don't even know if many of these guys played with him. So, I mean, there's a few guys, but yeah, I think that's just for you guys. I'm going to talk about, just like we do every week, what is our blueprint and what are our keys in order to go to Pittsburgh, which is a damn good football team and a really tough, hostile environment, and try to play our best.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
From Eau Claire to Green Bay.
Oh, my goodness, a powerful run to the house.
And Milwaukee to Madison.
Under duress, and it's a safety.
The tradition of Badger football lives here.
Touchdown, Wisconsin.
Join us Saturday. Wisconsin heads west to take on the Oregon Ducks. Our coverage begins at 4.
Now we'll get rolling.
On your home for Wisconsin football.
Here on 107.5 FM, 1260 AM, WLAK.
Maggie Dawn.
Governor Evers has sounded the alarm. 700,000 Wisconsinites might lose emergency food assistance. We discuss with Amanda Martinez and William Park Sutherland of Kids Forward. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to 107.5 WLAK, Amory's home for the Maggie Dawn Show, Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy, breezy, and colder night with lows in the upper 30s to 40. Mostly cloudy and cold tomorrow, a high only in the mid-40s. Sunny for Thursday, a high near 50. Temps continue to warm up through the rest of the week into the weekend. It's 42 right now.
Matt Nair on air.
He is the executive director of Back 40 Action. Will Westmoreland is here. So, Will, we can't sell our soybeans. There's no market for that. But Brooke Rollins, Secretary of Agriculture, says it's all great. What are you hearing from fellow farmers?
Well, Jane, we are the world's leader in one Department of Agriculture now that Donald Trump is president and Brooke Rollins is Secretary of Agriculture, and that's word salad.
Matt Nair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Robert Kennedy Jr. says America is under-babied. What can we do to encourage more Americans to become parents? Dr. Kristen Lyerly joins us. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
Doesn't look like the weather is necessarily going to improve on a Wednesday. Welcome in, everybody. It's the fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke. Yeah, this cloudy overcast stuff gets old quickly, doesn't it? And the winds are going to persist again today out of the northwest. 15, 20, gusting up to 30 miles an hour. Temperatures today not much better than about 48 degrees. And like I said, more clouds than sun as we roll our way through the day. Tomorrow, sunshine does return. We pick up a few degrees, 52. And then Friday, expecting widespread frost Thursday night into Friday morning. Friday should be sunny. We'll get out to about 55 degrees. I guess the good news is, as we look farther out into the weekend and even next week, Monday, temperatures back in the 60s. I don't want to steal all the thunder from Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist. He'll be on the way with the details in about 15 minutes. How are you doing this morning? Talk text line is open for you. Maybe you can give me an update on your harvest situation. Don't forget, download our brand new Midwest Farm Report app, and you can send me pictures of maybe some of the colors that still remain in your neighborhood. Maybe you took the kids out to the pumpkin patch or an apple orchard, something like that. Maybe the combines are rolling in your area. I'd love to see them. Midwest Farm Report available on both Apple and Android. Right there on the home screen, you'll see Submit. That's where you can send us a video. You can send us pictures. You can send a voice message. Whatever you'd like to do, we'd love to hear from you. We're also hearing from Stephanie Hoff this morning. You know, a lot of farmers not very happy with the price that they're seeing, especially on soybeans. What are their options? Well, some are deciding they're going to hang on to that crop. But is there storage space available? We'll take a deeper dive as we roll our way through the day.
Next on our Corn Hall of Fame tour, Pioneer brand Power Core and List Corn.
Ooh, look at all the trophies.
Yes, Power Core and List beats competitors with a 7.7 bushel per acre yield advantage. Three distinct modes of pest control action and unsurpassed herbicide flexibility mean above ground pests and weeds can't win.
But what if they try?
They wouldn't dare. Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
Get ready, Wisconsin. 10 days packed with discovery, fun, and excitement are coming your way. It's the Wisconsin Science Festival, October 16th through the 26th. With over 200 unique events in more than 50 counties, you'll find something for everyone. Kids, families, and lifelong learners. This year's theme, rock and roll. Dive into the music, motion, and geology with interactive events. Don't miss the fun. Visit wiscifest.org to find events near you.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers. Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy. From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Taking care of the land. That's something that's been talked about more and more and more when we come to our conservation. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire. But I went on an adventure to Edgar. I caught up with Patrick Saha. He is one of the Leopold finalists for this year when it comes to that conservation award. Well, let's just get started with a little bit of that farm history.
This is a fourth generation farm. I came back to the farm in about 94, 95, and I was milking cows with my mother. And we milked cows for about, I don't know, say 5-6 years after. And then we got into heifer raising. And the heifer raising has been a good experience, a good enterprise, I guess you could say. But now, as the years go by, there's less and less small dairy farmers to raise heifers for. And one of the reasons we got into no-tilling is because we were raising heifers, and the guys wanted us to start raising wet calves. So we'd give them at 5 to 7 days old and have to train them to drink milk, and we raise them up to a breeding age. But it seemed like we were doing chores all day long with all these calves coming in, and they all came in the months of about April, May, and June because of they were grazers. And so since we were in a barn all day, we decided, oh, man, it got to be tiring to do field work all night long, and that's how we started no-tilling. A neighbor had said, well, try no-tilling your corn into soybean stubble, and that should work good. And we just made a few modifications on our planter, and that seemed to work really well. And so then the next year, when it was a wet year, we actually rented a no-till drill to do soybeans. And then I ended up buying a no-till drill, and we started no-tilling soybeans in. But a seed guy says, well, you'd be better off getting a regular no-till soybean planter. You'd save money on a seed. And so that's what we did. And now here today we have a no-till corn planter, a no-till soybean planter, and then also just a no-till grain drill.
How many acres do you run, and what do you plant?
Right around 400 acres, or maybe just a little more than that. This year we had about 170 acres of soybeans. We had 160-some acres of corn, about 50 acres of hay or grass and alfalfa. And then there's about 15 acres of oats and about another 15 to 20 acres of rye every year. That's where we kind of in the rotation there.
Let's look at that conservation from no-tilling beans, no-tilling corn. You are part of a group that focuses on that too, aren't you?
Yes, the group of EPIC, which is Plain Integrated Conservation.
That group, does that mean it's made up of farmers right up here in this area?
Yes, they came together, the land conservation came together about, I want to say, the fall of 2017 or 2018, and it was farmers in the area. There was landowners or homeowners on the Eau Plaine flowage, and also some businesses that thought, you know, we have to start cleaning up the Eau Plaine because apparently the Eau Plaine or the Fenwood Creek is one of the most highest phosphorus concentrated water flows in the state. And I had just started no-tilling, so they asked me to be on the committee or on the group, and from there it just kind of grew from there, and it's really taken off. We host field days on our farm here, and we got to learn more about what our water does when it leaves the farm, where it ends up down by these homeowners that have beautiful houses on the Eau Plaine flowage and don't want to see green water in the summer.
And you talked about having a field day. How many of them have you had?
On average, hosting about one a year here, just on different trials, because we do cover crops with the no-tilling. And we had field days from trying out a drone to seeding rye seed on standing soybeans, like around Labor Day, or standing corn. We have done field days where they actually have gone on set insect traps to catch insects to see which ones are beneficial and which ones are harmful, so we know what we're spraying for. And surprisingly, about 95 to 97% of insects they caught were beneficial. We had field days on no-till practices or how to set up your planter or grain drill.
And you have some experiments that happen out in the field. You mentioned one that you had this fall, a little bit experimenting with the different kinds of cover crops. And what did that entail?
Well, this year we're doing an experiment on a cover crop in corn. We did strips of no cover crop, then strips of just cereal rye, and then strips of a buffet mix of tiller radish, brassicas, some grasses in there. And we're going to weigh the corn up, see if it affected the yield any doing the cover crop in there. And then we'll also take a biomass in the fall or spring, see how much tonnage of biomass we actually get out there. And what they're trying to see is there any difference in the corn yield? Does it affect is it helping the soil any, earthworms or stuff like that? But the other thing is it's all treated the same. Same corn variety, same herbicide program, all plant the same day. And that seems to be an issue that a lot of farmers have is, what herbicide program can I go with and still use cover crops?
And talking about those cover crops, you've had them around for a few years. What are some of the benefits that you've seen using your cover crops?
Well, the biggest benefit I see is the lack of soil erosion. When you put a cover crop on your soybean field like cereal rye, it seems to hold we don't get the erosion in the fall, but in spring when the snow melt comes. So what we have done here is we went to an earlier day bean. So we have our beans all off earlier, say by the first week of October, so we can put a cover crop of rye out there and get it established. And when I first started cover crops, my main goal was to help with the soil erosion, but also it's supposed to be doing the tillage. The rye roots are supposed to be down there breaking up the hard pan and stuff. Same with the cover crops and the corn, doing your tillage source. But the other thing I'm going to try is doing cereal rye after we combine corn in the fall and just go to my grain drill, plant it. And what I want that rye to do is be growing in spring to help suckle some of the moisture and dry the ground out a little bit also. Because without tillage, I'm not drying the ground out, but I do save a lot in fuel expense and wear and tear in tractors and stuff because I'm only making that one pass.
Was the water cleanliness and the runoff the biggest reason to add those?
Yes, because on the steeper hills, you're still going to get some erosion. Say in spring when I plant, even with a no-till planter, it does work the ground a little bit. And if you have a rainfall, there's going to be soil that could run down in those steeper slopes. And the buffer strips on the edge of the field help to catch that soil before it gets down, say, into a creek or something like that, or even a ditch.
What's the biggest benefit that you've seen from any of the conservation practices that you've done so far?
Well, the biggest benefit I notice is the saving in fuel and machinery. We don't have a chisel plow or soil finisher or disc or anything, and we do save a lot in fuel in spring. The second one is we don't pick a lot of rock anymore because we're not tilling the ground. You know, I have to say our yields are not the record-breaking yields, but we're right in the average with our neighborhood. And if you can save on one end by not your expenses going in, you can make money on the other end.
And looking ahead, anything new and exciting that you're thinking about trying?
Well, reevaluate a lot of our cover crops. The cover crop of putting cereal rye in after soybeans has been working well. Getting a good cover crop established in our corn, we're going to reevaluate that because we've been trying to always just run the seed with through an airflow when we put the urea on the corn. And sometimes it works, sometimes it don't. And that's a 50-50 shot. So we're going to try that no-tilling rye seeding after we combine the corn and the corn stalks. We're going to probably end up doing more buffer strips because some of the landlords that I rent from have noticed that actually is a good idea. And like they said, we don't want the water to be, we don't want to see brown water running off our fields.
What I find amazing is you're experimenting right out here in the field and sharing with other farmers and keeping the soil where it can be the most benefit to your crop and to you. And that was Patrick Saha. And I need to mention that's Patrick and Michelle Saha with all their kiddos have helped them get along and grow the farm and keep growing crops up here in Edgar. Leopold Conservation finalists for this year. And I'm Jill Welke from the northern end of the world's longest barn in Eau Claire, but chatting to you from Edgar, Wisconsin.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. The Wisconsin Department of Transportation just announced the official start date for one of its biggest ever construction projects, the I-94 East-West Project, which will reconstruct and widen a 3.5-mile stretch of interstate highway in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. This is a massive project with an estimated cost of more than $1.7 billion. And with this official start date announced, also came estimates for how long this will take. Construction is expected to last until 2030. At the recombobulation area, this project is something we've covered extensively, including with an award-winning four-part series called Expanding the Divide. It might be worth revisiting that series and considering how unnecessary and expensive an extra lane is and how in southeastern Wisconsin, we're going to be dealing with construction and delays for the next 8 years in order to shave a few minutes off suburban commute times while the city streets and city problems go ignored once again.
Find all of Dan's work at the recombobulation area. Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
Maybe what's happening at the school board needs to be disrupted.
Jim Santel and Joan Esposito, the Wisconsin teacher losing their job because of a social media post. The teacher's tweet disrupted the district's operations.
Judge says that overcomes the right of the teacher to speak publicly.
What if this were 60 years ago and she were putting up a post about desegregating the school?
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome No Packers, No Life director Craig Benzine and Northeast Wisconsin native son and the writer-director of a movie currently in theaters called The Twits, Phil Johnston. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
We have volume, though, as far as rain. What do you got?
Yeah, just that. Not much. 14 hundredths of an inch there in Madison. A little bit here and there. Green Bay, 18 hundredths. Park Falls, 9 hundredths. Wausau, a tenth of an inch. La Crosse, 2 hundredths. My friend John here in Armstrong, a quarter inch. And I see Appleton weighed in at 23 hundredths as well. So, you know, we didn't get soaked out. I know they kept on working in the fields, hauling manure around me. It just was that kind of day, and there's work to be done. Today, again, there is just a little rain around. The radar indicating that kind of east of Lake Winnebago on that eastern edge of Wisconsin, all the way down toward Racine, Kenosha, and back in the northwest part of the state, all the way up to Duluth, Superior, and into the Arrowhead of Minnesota. We expect, as low pressure is trying to pull northeast across Lake Superior, that the rain chance may continue for a bit today, especially in the central and northern parts of the state, even this morning, then again late this evening or just into the nighttime. That should be about the end of the rain, and then things dry out a bit. Folks that haven't had the frost advisories yet, western and southwest Wisconsin, all the way east to Mauston, down to Madison, that frost advisory is going to kick in later Wednesday night into Thursday morning. That could be the end of the growing season in some of those areas, as we expect those temps to drop down in the low 30s, maybe cold enough to bring it to an end, but the first real frost we're going to see spreading into that area and that frost advisory going into effect. The better news is, even though we talk about frost, high pressure building in, skies stay dry, and those temperatures begin to moderate. And in fact, on toward Friday and Saturday, I expect we find our way back up to normal. Mid and upper 50s, maybe a 60 in the south, even Saturday or Sunday. The weekend ahead sounds like a real joy after the cloudy and kind of damp couple of days we've had. I'll have forecast details right after this.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers. Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick? How did you?
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Mutual is the number one farm insurer in Wisconsin for a good reason. As a company founded by farmers, they understand the ag industry and its challenges. Local agents offer farm families the best advice and personalized coverage. Visit ruralmutual.com to find an agent near you.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Okay, it's time for our fan field goal kick of the game. Hey, he's wearing a Pioneer brand PowerCore Enlist Corn t-shirt.
Of course, Pioneer brand PowerCore Enlist Corn beats the competition's yields by 7.7 bushels an acre.
All right, here's the kick. It's good! Not bad for a guy in work boots.
Plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
All right, buddy, let's have that forecast. I'm not sure I'm going to like it all.
Oh, it's not too terrible. I mean, the Compere Financial Ag Weather Forecast does include clouds and a breezy day. Some showers in the east and west this morning may redevelop later today in the central and northern parts of the state. We ought to be talking about mid and upper 40s for highs today. The northwest winds a good 10 to 20, even gusting around 30 or better. Still a small rain chance this evening in a lot of spots, mostly cloudy, and those temps cooling down near, the low and mid 30s. The northwest winds 5 to 15. Have to talk about that frost advisory then into Thursday morning in the southwest, call it third of Wisconsin. Otherwise, by Thursday, mostly sunny. Still a bit cool, upper 40s and low 50s with a northwest breeze. Some sunshine expected as we head toward Friday, Pam, and that should sound like better news. and not expect we'll all start seeing a 50-degree reading around here Friday. Saturday, like I say, maybe a 60 in southern Wisconsin Sunday, too.
All right. Okay. See, that is the spirit. Let's tie a knot and hang on. It actually could be something that we could enjoy. Good. I'm happy to hear that. We'll see if the rest of the minions are chiming in on this to join us, if you will, as far as the enthusiasm for what might be.
It's going to be nicer.
No, that's what we need. Very good. Thanks, Stu. Talk text line is open. What do you think? Are we going to be able to make it into the next round for weather? 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. Let me know what you have to say about that.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of the Todd Alba Show, an interview with UW-Madison's Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager, James Small.
So what is the mission of this relatively new program?
Most of my work is done with local government. So our goal of the program is to work on reliability and sustainability of the EMS response system itself. So a lot of that depends on funding from local government. It depends on organizational structure of the systems. We're not doing anything with patient care or system quality at all. There's other excellent training providers to provide that training. But where the gap really existed was to work with these local governments, particularly the small local governments that don't have the resources, to help walk them through that process, whether it's how do you increase funding, how do you maybe take your two volunteer ambulances and push them together and create one full-time ambulance and split the cost between the two communities. A lot of those kind of discussions.
What's the biggest challenge for these municipalities? And the second part of that, what's the cause in your opinion?
I'm not sure on the cause. I think that we've seen a decline nationwide in the availability of EMS services, particularly with volunteer services, that there's just a decline in availability of volunteers. I don't think that there's a lack of people wanting to go into it. Our licensing data is pretty consistent going back over a decade that at any given point we have about 18,000 people that have licenses in the state. What we do see is that about 7.5% of them are leaving the field every year and turning in their license. Maintaining a workforce, when you think about that, every 12 years we have to train the equivalent of the entire workforce, that's problematic. And then as we've seen the costs increase, that becomes very challenging, I think, particularly for the small municipalities to make that lift and look, use the tools that are available to create the finances that are necessary to pay for things, because they may be going from a volunteer staff member to a full-time staff member, which is considerably more expensive. And then we also have like hyperinflation in this space, whether it's on capital equipment. Personnel costs are outpacing CPI by 2 to 3-fold going back almost 10 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, all at once, where a few years ago you might have been hiring a full-timer for $50,000 a year, that position might be 80 or 90 now.
Wow.
So it's gotten really, really expensive really, really fast. You know, when it was a volunteer system in the 80s, when a lot of these systems really came of age, there wasn't 911 yet. Mm-hmm. So the access of the system had a barrier in it, which 911 has erased, having that capacity to handle these increases too. Because if you look at some of these systems, you know, if they formed back in the early 70s, they might have done like a dozen calls that first year. Mm-hmm. That same system might be doing like a couple thousand now.
Really?
And you're trying to do it with the same base that you built it off of these volunteers that came in that wanted to come help the community, and they needed a first aid card and a CPR card because there wasn't even EMS licensing yet. For now, it's a couple hundred hours of training to get in the door.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump's ballroom dream continues becoming a reality. It turns out it'll take over much more of the original building than first thought. Here's ABC's Lana Moyes.
The Washington Post reports more than just the East Wing facade is being replaced to make way for President Trump's $250 million ballroom. The Post, citing a White House official, now says the entirety of the East Wing is being rebuilt. ABC News has not independently verified that report. Some critics slamming the project for lack of transparency. The president previously pledged construction would not impact the existing structure.
This is day 22 of the government shutdown. President Trump says he will not talk with Democrats until the government's reopened. Members of Congress still getting paid. Almost all other federal workers are not. The Louvre is reopened for the first time since Sunday's brazen jewelry hunt.
heist. Two buses crashing in Uganda overnight, killing at least 63 people. This is ABC News.
Bucks basketball is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Bucks begin their 58th season tonight in Milwaukee when they host the Wizards. Their new center, Miles Turner, says they've had a new level of energy preparing for tonight's game.
This past week of practice has been very intentional. I mean, I think it's been really good. Guys are talking up, making noise, just talking back and forth and whatnot. And I think that's how it's supposed to be, especially throughout the year. You know what I'm saying? We're intense in practice, when it makes the games that much easier.
NFL, the Packers at practice for Sunday night in Pittsburgh. Matt LaFleur downplaying the matchup against the Steelers quarterback, Aaron Rodgers.
I don't even know if many of these guys played with him. So, I mean, there's a few guys, but yeah, I think that's just for you guys. I'm going to talk about, just like we do every week, what is our blueprint and what are our keys in order to go to Pittsburgh, which is a damn good football team and a really tough, hostile environment, and try to play our best.
That's Matt LaFleur with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. From Indiana University canceling its school newspaper to Northern Wisconsin being served by high school students, we'll discuss it with Pat Kreitler and Trigby Olson. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
107.5 WLAK, Amory's real news and great conversation.
And home to Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings from 9 to 11.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A cloudy, breezy, and colder night with lows in the upper 30s to 40. Mostly cloudy and cold tomorrow, a high only in the mid-40s. Sunny for Thursday, a high near 50. Temps continue to warm up through the rest of the week into the weekend. It's 42 right now.
The Todd Alba Show.
Paul Jaconi Berry and Sean Hannish back with another great Wisconsin sports film. No Packers, No Life.
Sean came across No Packers, No Life at the Wisconsin Film Festival and said, you got to see it. We got to see if we can do something. This movie is just such a great opportunity to really see the impact of Wisconsin culture halfway around the world in Japan. It is just so magical and joyful. Yeah. So I encourage everybody to come take a look.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station. And on the app.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent Darren Von Ruden appearance on Matt and Air on Air.
How are our dairy farmers doing?
So Dad Cap's latest numbers showed that we're down to just a little bit over 5,200 dairy farms. Back in 1986, when I graduated from high school, we had 44,800 and something dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin. And so today, now with that information coming out, we've dropped a lot faster than I thought we would. Back in the late 90s, I did some work on dairy pricing reform and tried to get a system in that would hopefully keep more smaller farms in business, and have not succeeded in that yet. And so, you know, we're looking at that number, you know, continuing to dwindle. So next year, by the time my 40-year graduation date is, I'm pretty sure we're going to be under 5,000 dairy farms in the state of Wisconsin, because we're still losing one and a half a day. Since 2020, we've lost 25% of the dairy farms here in the state. And, you know, that just, it's disheartening. Really, it should be looking at a national security issue for a couple different reasons. Number one, because diversity is always the best way to have a food system. If you get too congregated, it really puts the whole system at stake. And, you know, number two, we just have to make sure that we have a high quality workforce. We're losing those generations of high quality workers.
I guess the question, and something we always talk about, Darren, on the show, whether it's with you or with other farmers or just in general when we're discussing this topic, is the government's role in working with the farmers and the farming industry. What is, in your mind, and I don't even want to say a perfect world, but what does the government do in your version that helps sustain the amount of farmers, grow them, or at least take care of them to the place where they're not having to worry every single day about shutting down. What do you want to see from the government as far as partnership? What do they need to do?
So number one thing is make sure that there's a fair market. Looking at what's going on across the country with the very uncompetitive markets that we see, because we can't sell our products into a market that's not being manipulated by big business at this point. It's been that way for decades already. It's just getting worse because we have less players there. Number two, making sure that farmers get a plus production for the products that they produce so that they can stay in business and that, you know, new farmers can actually come into the business too. Or number three, stop handing out government checks to the largest farms at prices at an amount that's way above what should be.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
4 in the AMC again.
96.7 FM.
1670 AM.
The Zone.
Yeah, the weather might be slowing us down as far as the harvest of 2025 is concerned, but right now farmers are thinking strategically about what they're going to do with that crop. You know, one issue, the prices, we just don't like where they're at, especially for soybeans. Are things going to get better? A lot of farmers are hoping that. So to manage the crop that they're harvesting, many of them taking a look at storage as an option. Stephanie Hoff did a little deeper dive to find out how much storage is available. You may have that as your plan, but have you inquired on available space? That's one of the conversations we're bringing to you. I'm the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. Yes, this is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 22nd day of October. Let's see. On this day back in 1879, thank you, Thomas Edison. He successfully tested an incandescent light bulb. And from there on, the world changed. That was on this day back in 1879. On this day in 1843, Stephen Moulton Babcock was born. Now, for agriculture, that's a big deal. See, he came to the University of Wisconsin. He was a professor of agricultural chemistry and chief chemist for the Wisconsin Agricultural Experiment Station. In 1890, he developed the Babcock test, which determined the butterfat content of milk. And quite frankly, he changed the dairy world when he did the Babcock test, thanks to Stephen Moulton Babcock, born on this day back in 1843. This one's kind of fun. On this day in 1938, a guy down in Footville in Rock County won his sixth county title, husking ears of corn. He husked a record 24.5 bushel of corn in 80 minutes. He ended up finishing fourth in the national competition that was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. 24.5 bushel of corn in 80 minutes. Man, I'll tell you, today we probably do about 24.5 bushel in half a second, it seems, with the technology we've got. But that's why we reflect, right? Happy birthdays. We're reflecting on Christopher Lloyd, thinking back to his days with Back to the Future. He's 86 today. And Jeff Goldblum, he turned 72. And now you know. Wiffles Wednesday is upon us, and we're happy to keep you up to speed on what's happening with Wisconsin's harvest. It's been a little herky-jerky this week. Let's find out about it. Cooper Humphreys is one of the fellows with the Wiffles hybrid team that's joined us this morning. So, yeah, Cooper, I got to just give me the update on what things look like in your neck of the woods. You know, like we had mentioned off air, we went like crazy and blasted through the soybeans pretty quickly. Now the corn's a little bit different situation.
Yeah, definitely. Had a good stretch of weather to get a lot of these soybeans off, which was really nice. Corn's been a little touch and go, you know, a couple tenths of rain here, half inch there, a couple tenths again here this morning. So just haven't really been able to put a full stretch together. But from what has come off and what guys are able to get done, so far, so good. So definitely hoping we get a stretch of weather to keep pounding away here. Pretty early in the month yet, but definitely time to keep going and have a big run.
Right, right. How have the stalk qualities held up? That's the only thing that I get a little nervous about when we see moisture and then winds. Everything's still standing pretty good?
Yeah, definitely. it was a pretty big disease year for the most part. So there's definitely a few standability issues out there, you know, encouraging guys to get out, check the fields, figure out where you're going next. For the most part, things are hanging in there, maybe a little better than anticipated, but it's definitely time to keep moving and really pay attention to what field you're going to go to next.
Yeah, you bet. Cooper Humphreys along with us on our Wyffels Wednesday. Just want to remind you about their website, wyffels.com, WYFFELS.com. Part of the reason I bring that up, Cooper, is that without USDA data to tell us how the harvest is progressing, that Wyffels website, you guys have been asking farmers and your cooperators to chip in knowledge on the harvest. It's going pretty well, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Kind of kicked that off. Got where customers can go in and farmers can go in and kind of plug in their percent harvest complete and kind of how things are looking out there, a little bit of a brief overview of what some yields are doing, and kind of kicked it off in the spring with a little bit of a planting progress update map that went pretty well. And here this fall, it's also going kind of good. Kind of gives you a chance, you know, like guys in our area, they can kind of look at, okay, what's happening in Illinois, or how are those guys progressing and vice versa. So it's been kind of cool.
Well, and we know that traders are also looking for some of that independent information without government USDA reports to lean on. Again, Cooper Humphreys along with us. It's a Wyffels Wednesday. Let's talk about some of the products that you're impressed with so far, Cooper. Like you said, we still have corn standing out there, but you've already had some plots that you've had a chance to evaluate.
Yeah, definitely. Kind of just getting in the thick of it as far as taking plots off here, but real happy with what we see. We really beefed up kind of the early side of our lineup here. Got a lot of new products, but a couple that are standing out to me are 2674, a new hunter in one day, and on the SmartStax Pro side of 1599, 96 days, so kind of on the early end, but right in the wheelhouse here where I'm at, and think we got some impressive yield coming along with it.
And it is a good time, you know, like maybe you get knocked out of the field for a few hours with these rain events that have been popping up. You guys, I'm sure, are ready to talk about business for 2026.
Oh, definitely. Yep. The sales season has kind of already kicked off here and got a lot of early orders in and a lot more coming, and kind of trying to fine tune that final seed order for 2026 here as we move through this fall.
Excellent. So we'll just kind of keep watching that Wyffels website if you want to see how the harvest is progressing around Wisconsin and really all of the upper Midwest. That's where the Wyffels family lives. That's where the territory is that they serve. Cooper Humphrey is one of the fellows that's out there bringing you this Wyffels Wednesday. Again, I want to pivot you to their website. You can find out more about the history of the company and also find out more about how yields are performing all around the upper Midwest. That's Wyffels.com, WYFFELS. .com. Cooper Humphreys along with us on our Wyffels Wednesday.
At CHS, we know what it takes to feed and fuel the world, to integrate a global ag and energy supply chain, to advocate for farmers in their fields and around the world, to build communities, invest in rural America, and empower rural economies. It takes courage, conviction, commitment. It takes the nation's leading farmer-owned cooperative. It takes a co-op. It takes CHS.
I'll tell you what, the old world flavors and recipes just keep folks coming back at Bavaria Sausage, and they're sharing the story beyond Wisconsin's borders. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke encouraging you to check out Bavaria Sausage's newly revised website. Talk about ease of shopping all in one place. Go to BavariaSausage.com. All those flavors you're looking for in the Landjagers, the brats, the summer sausage, all right there. Plus, great gift boxes with that Wisconsin flair. And if you're looking for the German accent of the holidays, of course, BavariaSausage.com has it. If you're a little bit rushed with a hectic life, Bavaria Sausage understands that as well. Take a look at their in-store restaurant quality individual packaged meats, from chicken wings and breasts right on through to pork chops, tenderloins, and burger patties. It's just part of what Bavaria Sausage does. And does well. Check it out online now, BavariaSausage.com.
Next on our Corn Hall of Fame tour, Pioneer brand Power Core and List Corn.
Ooh, look at all the trophies.
Yes, Power Core and List beats competitors with a 7.7 bushel per acre yield advantage. Three distinct modes of pest control action and unsurpassed herbicide flexibility mean above ground pests and weeds can't win.
But what if they try?
They wouldn't dare.
plant the 100th season of Pioneer. Visit pioneer.com/powerup.
Have you heard about the grand champion giant pumpkin this year? It was grown by Jim Ford, who's a farmer from Fond du Lac. Came in weighing 2,491 pounds. Now, I don't know if you realize it or not, but there is actually a group of giant pumpkin growers in the state of Wisconsin. Thomas Motzma is one of those. He's not too far from Jim in Fond du Lac. In fact, Thomas Motzma is in Brandon. And he's been a part of the competitive giant pumpkin growing group for over a decade. And he says a lot of people don't realize how much work they really are.
We'll start our seeds in early April. And then a week or two later, we'll actually start some backups just in case our first ones don't actually work. And then we will grow them inside in basement or in the house, wherever you find your sweet spot. And then under grow lights. And then they'll go out in the garden late April to early May, all depending on, you know, what kind of spring we have. And then we'll, a lot of growers now will put them in many, many tents or many greenhouses, 5x10, 10x20. And then before we set that, we'll have hitting cables usually dug in the ground. And then they get transplanted outdoors, like I said, late April, early May. And then they get the TLC from the greenhouse until they get big enough where the greenhouse will have to be taken off.
How about that? Thomas Motzma, one of the members of Wisconsin's competitive Giant Pumpkin Growers Association. He says these days everybody's shooting to grow a pumpkin that weighs as close to 3,000 pounds as they can get it, maybe even better. Markets not necessarily getting better on a Wednesday morning. Yesterday in Chicago, the barrel cheese was up a quarter of a cent at 177.5. 40-pound block cheese dropped 3 to 176.5, while AA butter stood still at $1.58 a pound. Early on a Wednesday morning, November Class 3 milk that goes into cheese is up 18 cents at 17.16 a hundredweight. December's up 2 at 16.53 a hundredweight. Right now, December corn is unchanged at 420. March corn up a quarter, 434. November soybeans are 2 cents stronger, currently at 1033. January up 2 at 1050. The July new crop wheat right now down about a penny at 538 a bushel. Wisconsin farmers may not have record-breaking yields for corn or beans, but they've got to find a place to market it. That's been a challenge. Stephanie Hoff joining us with some options on that next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. In 2023, under pressure from election conspiracy activists, Texas and 9 other red states left the multi-state cooperative called ERIC, which helped to keep state voter rolls clean. 2 years later, local election officials are asking Texas state election officials for immediate fixes to its reportedly erratic homegrown voter registration system called TEAM. Governor Greg Abbott signed SB 1070 in June 2023, authorizing state officials to create a state-run interstate voter registration cross-check system. Over 2 years later, and on the eve of the TEAM system's rollout, VoteBeat Texas reports that 4 organizations representing Texas election officials cited inconsistent system behavior, only intermittent and under-resourced support, and statewide training gaps. Just last month, Texas Secretary of State Jane Nelson announced agreements with 9 states to share and compare voter registration data in an effort to replace the Electronic Registration Information Center's sophisticated data processing capability to identify voters who moved, died, or registered in more than one state. The Texas election officials said in their letter, "The current state of the TEAM rollout creates undue risk to voters and the integrity of election officials," and urged action before November 4th. We've linked to local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
This is Robert Pilot, host of Native Roots Radio. On our show, we talk about Native issues like treaties, protecting Mother Earth, and holding our elected officials accountable. You'll also hear from Turtle Island voices like Arvina Martin, State Representative Heather Keeler, Ruth Anna Buffalo, Dr. Anthony Stately, State Senator Mary Kunish, Robert Lilligren, and Bob Blake. Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Native Roots Radio, weeknights at 8 on your local Civic Media radio station.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Pat Kreitlow.
On Wednesday, Ellie Bordeaux will tell us what she's been putting in our daily newsletter at Up North News. And from Civic Media, Earl Ingram from the What's Going On podcast.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Opportunity, especially with China, when it comes to soybeans. So what are farms to do? Many may not have storage on the farm, and it looks like they don't like the prices they're getting today. That means they need to find storage for their crop. Stephanie Hoff did a little deeper dive on what kind of available storage they may find.
With the government shutdown, we are missing out on the crop progress and condition reports from USDA, but luckily we can check in with local elevators on how the harvest is coming along. We're checking in with grain merchandiser Alex Beaver out of the southeast, south central region of Wisconsin. He tells us not just how the crop is looking as it comes in, but where it's going. First, he gives us a progress report on the soybean harvest, which is nearing the finish line.
Yeah, I would say we're probably 75% or greater done on soybeans. There are a few beans out here, but for the most part, everything came off in pretty short order. Quality-wise and quantity, you know, yields have been average to above average. Here, Jefferson East, first part of August when Milwaukee got their 12 to 14-inch rain event, we did have some 4 to 10 inch totals in this geography, which definitely took a toll on some of the bean yields. But as a whole, you know, guys have been pretty positive. And like I said, things have been average to above average yield wise.
A larger question right now, Alex, has been where are these soybeans going to go? Our largest buyer, China, is backed out.
The majority of the beans that come into Inside FS here in Jefferson do end up going down to the Illinois River, which then, you know, in the long run, make it into the export market as well. You know, we do have some other outlets that we do take some beans to, but that is where the majority of our beans end up.
When we talk about river levels, it's been pretty dry up here. But how is it looking? What have you heard?
I have not heard much on river levels to the south. You know, have heard whispers that river levels are low because it has been dry, but I have not heard a whole lot. At the moment, basis prices here locally that I've seen are holding fairly steady. It's definitely not like the Dakotas and Western Minnesota that has taken on a very high basis because there's a lot of beans left out there. That doesn't seem to be the case here locally. It seems like basis are more typical to what they are year over year.
When you compare us to other states, where does Wisconsin see that the shipping advantage versus maybe our neighbors to the west?
So my comment about our beans going down to the Illinois River, I think that gives us another outlet where I know the Dakotas and Western Minnesota, a lot of that goes on rail to the West Coast, which historically then was exported directly to China.
Any concern that Wisconsin growers will have to compete with Minnesota, Dakota's growers if they start sending their beans our way?
Not that I have heard, no. If growers have the ability to store beans, they are storing a few more beans. Generally, though, it seems like in my geography, a lot of growers sell beans and tend to store more corn. We do have more outlets here in Wisconsin on the corn side of things with ethanol and other some of the chicken farms locally, and there's just more options for corn than there are soybeans. So that seems to be what happens with on-farm storage.
Do you expect to see more of your customers keeping it on farm, or does Insight expect to store some of those beans themselves?
I think that we probably will store a few more beans on farm, and Insight will probably have more guys store some soybeans than normal. I think this year, especially, it comes down to cash flow and what growers need to do, you know, cash flow wise for their operation.
right? Because you don't store beans for free.
Correct. Yep. There is a cost associated to that at the moment. Our storage costs are similar to what they have been in the past, though.
What is the farmer attitude when they come to the elevator? What are you hearing?
You know, generally, it's been a positive attitude. You know, yields, like I said, have been average to above average. And then you mentioned right away at the beginning, weather has been great and harvest has moved along at a pretty quick pace, which that has everybody in a good mood. As we get into corn here for harvest, I have been out walking a lot of fields recently. It seems like in our geography here in southeastern Wisconsin, stalk quality and integrity is not the greatest. I know everybody wants to leave things stand in the field to try and capture some drying from Mother Nature. But I just have been, you know, trying to encourage guys to be timely with harvest and don't be afraid to go get after corn harvest because I don't think things are going to stand, you know, till Thanksgiving like they have in the past.
Thank you, Alex, for the insights and advice as the soybean harvest nears the finish line in Wisconsin and the corn for grain harvest gets to a start. Alex Beaver is a grain merchandiser in South Central and Southeast Wisconsin. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Don't act like that. Don't wear that. Don't think that. I've heard everything you tell yourself every time you felt different. And I want you to know that you can be vulnerable and powerful. That taking care of your mind is taking care of everyone you love and who loves you. Love your mind. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
U.S. dairy farmers and processors have good reasons to want the immigration problem fixed. That's next on Farm to Fork. As you've probably heard by now, the 12 agricultural safety and health centers around the country did receive a renewal of their federal funding support and will not be shutting down. Many of those centers had projects in progress, and those will now be able to continue. Also continuing the Ag Safety and Health Campaign on Farm to Fork. To learn how you can assist with that, visit the homepage at NorthshoreProductions.com. Have you ever done a risk assessment on your farm or ranch? If you haven't, you should, especially if you have employees there. They may, in fact, be required by law where you are. In any case, it's not a bad idea and helps promote a safety mindset. You can find out online how to set one up. Farm safety and health is everyone's business. This reminder is brought to you by Farm to Fork through the generous support of listeners like you across the country. Learn how you can help at NorthshoreProductions.com. U.S. dairy depends heavily on an immigrant workforce, and solving the current turmoil in that arena is a priority. Dara Maccabee is CEO of Idaho Milk Products and also the chairman of the International Dairy Foods Association.
There is plenty of jobs for Americans. We need to enrich our industry with talent we bring from elsewhere, and that will create opportunity and jobs for all Americans. So there needs to be a recalibration, I think, of our attitude towards immigrants at all levels, because we need them. We won't have viable dairy farms or processing plants without adequate workforce.
And here's Randy Mooney, chairman of Dairy Farmers of America.
What we need as a U.S. dairy industry is some clear immigration policy that says this is how this is going to work. This is how we're going to have labor on farms that's legal labor. But we need more clarity in how the U.S. government sees labor on farms and how we work within our farms to have that labor on our farms. We want to work within the law, absolutely within the law, but sometimes all these things are cloudy.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
Governor Evers has sounded the alarm. 700,000 Wisconsinites might lose emergency food assistance. We discuss with Amanda Martinez and William Park Sutherland of Kids Forward. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. Businesses across the state counting on $1.5 billion in federal funding are finding out it's not coming. The money had been approved to help pay for energy-saving projects, solar and wind development, technology innovation, and more. The Department of Energy is now reportedly canceling those awards. One group that is getting a boost in federal funding, AI data center developers. The new federal budget lets tech companies claim more upfront tax breaks on data center equipment, facilities, and production lines, and it appears to be working. Microsoft recently announced what it calls the world's most powerful AI data center planned for Mount Pleasant. But environmental groups warn unfettered AI development could cause lasting harm to our natural resources. Knowledge is power. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Sources tell ABC that President Trump is pressuring his own Justice Department to pay him $230 million as a settlement from two previous investigations, one involving potential ties he had to Russia in the 2016 election, the other related to the handling of classified documents found at Mar-a-Lago. Vice President J.D. Vance in Israel meeting with Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu and saying of the ceasefire.
We have a very, very tough task ahead of us, which is to disarm Hamas, but rebuild Gaza to make life better for the people in Gaza, but also to ensure that Hamas is no longer a threat to our friends in Israel.
President Trump's pick to lead a federal watchdog agency has withdrawn his name from consideration, Paul Ingrassia, after multiple offensive text messages were found on his phone. Construction of the White House ballroom goes on at the same time as destruction of the White House East Wing, the National Trust for Historic Preservation, asking for a pause so a public review can take place. This is ABC News.
Catch Farm Report up.